This episode of To The Last Drop is sponsored by the Listen Audio app, where you can stream all your favorite radio stations, you can catch up on all the latest news and entertainment, and dive into captivating podcasts like this one, all in the same app.
Download Listen, that's LISTN, from the App Store or Google Play. The Listen Audio app, everywhere you are.
It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
Welcome back. This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell. I'm back. I was gone last week. Liam filled in very well for me. I listened to the episode. I quite enjoyed it there. Liam Del Carme's with me, and we've got a special guest today, all the way from Durban, World Cup winner, Oxen Chair. Welcome, Liam. Welcome, Ox.
Yeah. I have to say, Ox, you still have that World Cup winning glow about you. I hope that lasts for a very long time.
I think it's a lighting, Liam, mate.
Now, Ox, obviously, I suppose the first question, I mean, we all saw what happened at the World Cup. We saw the impressive trophy tour afterwards. First of all, how did you survive that trophy tour? Because it looked extremely long and taxing in so many different ways, not just the length of it, but I'm sure there was some lubrication on the buses as well. What have you been doing in your 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks that you've had off?
Well, yeah, the trophy, it was a fairly taxing. I had a lot of fun. Probably tried to sleep at least 6 hours every single day, and that's how I kept going. and then, yeah, afterwards, when I came to Durban just to look if my place is so far, and then went back home, and then, yeah, did a few things back home, and then, yeah, and went to Mpumalanga for some off time. Took a break, and then I came back to Durban.
I know you guys have been away from home for a very long time, and obviously you used to touring. I mean, you toured in Super Rugby and obviously URC and so on, and now with the Springboks. This trophy tour, I take it there were moments where you longed for home just as much as you perhaps did in Auckland or if you were in Cardiff or wherever.
Actually, funny enough, because that's what, after we won, we finally get to go home. And you see family. And then during the trophy tour, you actually you get a moment, actually it means a lot more for people of South Africa being on the tour than actually being home. And I think that's when you're like, you know what, I have one more week in me. I'm just going to go out. And then, as much as I wanted to go home, but I felt like for me, it was more important than to be on a bus tour, to see the kids' faces, to see the joy on people's faces. Just, it's just wholesome.
Have you felt like your life has changed now that you're a World Cup winner? I mean, Beast was there the last one. You came into the BOC team basically just after that and established yourself. But this last four-year journey, does it feel like it's anything different? And have you noticed people sort of change towards you now that you're a World Cup winner?
Yeah, fairly. I mean, it's weird because I used to, it was like, I'd walk into a mall and I'd walk out just fine, walk in, get what I need to get and get out. And now you walk into a mall and you're like, yeah, that's Ox. Then everyone now people that you've always been, you go to the same shops and then you've been walking past them, beating them. All of a sudden now you have to stop, take pictures and all of that. But there's been a massive change. And but I'm enjoying it.
I can imagine. We saw that video. I'm sure you also saw the Makazole trying to go to Spa and people breaking out in song. You haven't had that happen to you. You just get, have you?
It did. Actually, I was literally in Bloemfontein and I went to the garage in the morning. I was driving back to Durban. And, I don't know, three people noticed me, the workers there. And then all of a sudden, they started singing. And I was like, hey, I'm just trying to get out of here.
Have things ended up on your plate or on your table as a result of your fame?
Oh, really? I mean, Woolworths came through with some cake, and gave me they said I could go to any Woolworths in the country and get myself cake, which is fantastic. And as well as Hasak Girl, so as well same. Anytime I need a steak, I can go there and, I have a few steaks. So
do you have a favorite cake?
Yeah, chocolate caramel cake.
Ooh.
And yeah, and then I saw actually recently, I think it was 2 days ago, Woolworths had a collaboration with like Chateau, like the cake company, mm. and they actually like had a similar like a different chocolate caramel, but it looks delicious. I think mm. Brendan would enjoy it.
Maybe it sounds like it should be one dedicated to you.
I must admit, I don't really have a sweet tooth. I'm more, my problem is more some of the brewery stuff that sort of catches me. But but yeah, I mean, you become quite famous on social media for your cakes and that. And I mean, as you say, you've got some nice offers there. I was just wondering, Alan Temple Jones is still your guys' fitness guy, isn't he? Has your fitness team been handling the cake offers?
So unfortunately TJ left, and I think he's with the Irish Sevens now, but Quinton, you know, Kruger is our new conditioning guy. But you know what, they said as long as the numbers add up on the GPS, I can still maintain my cake life.
This is from a man who studied statistics but refuses to count calories.
Well, I think that's a good motto to live by.
So. Now, tell me, Ox, you've got kind of a special place in Springbok fans' hearts. I mean, you've sort of crept your way in there, and I won't say made yourself at home because people kind of have to invite you in. But the point is, you are a much loved character already. That's not something that you cultivated. All this comes naturally. I mean, you're a guy who smiles often and you have a particular relationship with new people that you meet. You take it all in your stride, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, like, my mom always taught me, like, you know, people will always forget what you say or what you say to them, and probably, like, what you even do to them, but, like, how you make them feel will always, like, stay in their hearts. And I think that's what I've, like, and from a young age, that's what I've always tried to do, like, just leave a certain, like, positive impact in people's lives. And, yeah, I guess it just grew on me and became part of my personality.
I'm going to ask a rugby question somewhere around you, I suppose, eh? I'll ask it because I know Liam was there. You've probably been asked this somewhere around the last couple of weeks of the World Cup. But the obvious thing that comes to mind straight away when we think about you is obviously the scrumming against England, and that second half performance. Just maybe from your point of view, when you came on, I mean, it was pretty tense at that time. You guys were pretty behind, and just your performance turned the game. You got a lot of compliments, a lot of plaudits for it. Just from your point of view, how did you see those last minutes, and how did it feel when you came onto that field?
To be honest, like, we were sitting on the bench and then we were watching the game because we could literally, like, obviously see the guys that were starting, like, doing all the work, even though the ball wasn't, like, really bouncing in our favor. But we could see, and I remember Pollard saying, by the time we get on, the forwards would be broken already. And same with Achia and Kwach. He says, but the only thing that we have to do is just be critical in what we do. Like, don't do anything that's out of the natural or force things. Like, do anything that you think, you know what, will help the team. And I think it's, you know, I mean, Pollard came on and he did what he does best. Iceman, same with RG, he's like, you know what, standard boys. We just do what we practice in the week. And I think by then, the guys that started had already done their job. And for me, I was like, you know what, as well, I'm also going to try and make a contribution. And then, yeah, I mean, it went well. We all aligned, and yeah, plan worked, I guess.
You've obviously come into a setup that has been successful. Obviously, there's been World Cup success. There's been success in the Rugby Champs and so on against the Lions as well. And obviously, the guys play with a certain confidence. They have confidence about them in the way they do their job. Even when they are backs to the wall, they find a way of winning. How does a guy that comes into that environment, how does that rub off? How do you build up that similar confidence to sort of fight your way out of a corner the way the more experienced guys have been able to do?
To be honest, you find your way. Like you said, like, Because, I mean, what Stephen gives to the team is what is different from what I give to the team. So I can't expect myself to fight out of a corner the way Stephen does. So, and it's the same way with every single player. Like, you find what keeps you going as a player.
Your own self-belief, basically.
Exactly. Your reason for even playing rugby, you understand? So, and differs for, and you let that take you out of the corner. Because, I mean, we, like, Coach Ross and Coach Rock will always, like, tell you, like, they pick warriors. And warriors always, like, kind of, they're selfless and have purpose. So once you find that, and it just becomes easy, you can apply the way, like, yourself, the way that is expected of you, something that is within your nature and not something that is unnatural to you.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Also, I mean, that World Cup winners medal must be something special. I know a lot of your teammates wore it on the trophy tour. Have you got a special place for it? And just what does it mean to you to have that? I mean, I know as a rugby player, you've got lots of awards and things, probably a bit of a shrine, a trophy cupboard there somewhere in your house. But where does that figure for you? And what does it mean that nobody can take that thing away from you?
It's on the top shelf. For me, it's being a part of history, being able, like you said, and being like, you know, being a part of history, being in people's hearts, in the memories. And, you know, I think that's the most important thing for me, is the thing that, and it's on the top shelf. Like, I don't think anything beats that.
I was going to follow up. You weren't going to be like Sonny Bill Williams and give your medal away to anybody, I take it.
No
too precious. Too precious at the moment.
No, very precious.
Obviously, the winning the trophy is a big moment, and sort of going onto the podium and collect your medal, that's huge. But during the tournament, is there a standout moment for you? Do you have a favorite moment out of the, I don't know, you were away for how many, a lot of weeks?
Like from our team in general, would probably be probably the last moment against the French, where we're defending and just Fauches came in there and ripped the ball out. And just to, you know, like I still remember the sound of that stadium vividly, how it felt like the fans were on the field. And then when Fav got into a tackle and ripped the ball, and it just all went, and it was just us. You could, like, I could feel all our teammates on the field. I think that moment was like, you know, it's special. It's worth it. It's worth being away from home.
Did you feel, or did you sense that the locals' demeanor changed towards you guys in the last 2 weeks?
I think naturally, like, you know, they were pretty heartbroken, but you know, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I had a few moments where you kind of had to sort of think twice before you identified yourself as being South African.
Exactly.
There were no offers of cake then from the French there for you then, obviously.
There were. I just had my suspicions about having him.
I can imagine. Just coming back to, obviously, the Sharks now. You've now been away. You've had some time off. Team's been struggling. Obviously, they haven't had the greatest start to the URC this year. And you guys get back. You come from the high of a World Cup final. It must be nice to be back in sort of familiar surroundings. But isn't that a bit difficult to come from that high back to you playing sort of URC rugby again? How do you approach that?
I mean, it's the same. So, I've been asked that question before, and I say it's the same because, I mean, you, as a player, you kind of set a certain standard for yourself, and you want to perform a certain way. You want to leave a certain picture, obviously, with every single game you play. And for me, it's honestly saying, you know what, this is how I played at the World Cup, and from here, I need to just get better and apply myself more, and obviously help the team where I need to help them. And, you know, that's just my mindset.
Do you feel that there is also more pressure, especially from the returning Springboks, for you guys to sort of pitch up and deliver from the first moment, given the position that the Sharks were in? And obviously, you guys are the high-profile players and you need to deliver.
Not actually. Like, I mean, Coach Plummer is pretty honest. He's like, he's a straightforward guy, and he'll tell, like, he's honest with what is needed. And I think he's same with him. He says, you know what, do what you're good at and apply yourself wherever you can, help wherever you can. And obviously, you know, just be patient and, you know, enjoy every single moment.
The fact that the UFC is a long competition, it's a bit of a marathon. I take it teams can sort of take solace out of that, especially if you have a bad start. You know that this tournament is long enough for you to sort of build momentum and sort of redress the things that may have gone wrong for you earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, it's not like you can have a bad start, but then you can still, like, be able to finish and, like, top of the log. I mean, we've seen that with teams in history. And so, yeah, I mean, our aim is just from here, how can we get better and how can we improve to make sure that we get, like, good results every single weekend from here on.
When you sit back at the end of the day, what is your what do you sit back to enjoy and relax with? And what pairs better with the cake?
I reckon a glass of cognac, preferably to say, you know, has a lot of, like, it's smooth, has a lot of flavor. And yeah, you know, that's my go to. What pairs well with cake? Cake stands alone.
if you say cognac, do you drink brandy at all?
I mean, I am from the Free State.
Well, then you have to have obligation. That's it.
Yeah, that's standard.
Well, they call it Bucky Baclay juice, eh? What's it? That's the
Benoni.
But yeah, I mean, cognacs are obviously a lot more refined, and you drink it very differently to brandy. But some of those rugby players, have, like John Smith and them, have launched now brandy. Have you had that one yet?
Avante.
Yeah.
I haven't actually. We got a few bottles. Like every player got a bottle, but yeah, I haven't opened it yet. Like, I just feel like it just looks. It looks pretty.
Like the box.
The bottle. I like the bottle.
So yeah, I mean, there seems to be a trend there. I mean, Trevor brought out his gin as well, and I mean, Malcolm and Stephen have got their Bomb Squad lager. When are we going to see Ox's? What's going to be your signature one?
I don't know yet. Everything has its own timing. Just have to wait for the right time and see. You know, but probably like a bakery or something. I don't know.
I seem to recall a shooter called a chocolate cake from my younger days. I think it's probably still doing the rounds. So best to investigate that. Sorry?
I just might.
listen, thanks for your time. Obviously, it's a long season, and you've done other interviews today. Thanks for giving us some time. I hope it was fun for you. It was a lot of fun for us. And yeah, and good luck for the season, and I'm sure we'll chat to you sometime soon again.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, and yeah, I enjoyed the interview, and yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day as well, guys.
Thanks, Ox. Cheers, man.
To the Last Drop, where try time and wine time go hand in hand.
Welcome back, guys. We're back with a very special guest, Sandile Ngwabo, the Springbok Sevens coach. Of course, the Sevens, the revamped, reshaped, streamlined Sevens series starts again in Dubai this weekend, and then next week's the big one, the Cape Town Sevens. Sandile, you're not in Dubai with the guys. We know why you're not there, but maybe just tell everybody on the pod why you're not there.
Yeah, I miraculously injured myself while playing conditioning games with the boys. They were uneven, so I thought, well, just for this part, I'll jump in with the boys and throw the ball around. And I guess the tempo is too fast for me. These guys are too fast, and maybe I'm getting older. But yeah, I ripped my Achilles in the process, and then yeah, I went for surgery.
Are you okay? You on the road to recovery at least?
Yeah, no, we're on the right path. I started physio yesterday, and swelling has went down, stitches are dissolving. So yeah, I'm actually on the right path. So yeah, I should be good for Cape Town and Perth.
What's the biggest challenge of not having the team in front of you, or you, seeing them doing the things that they're supposed to be doing? What's the biggest frustration there?
I guess it's more personal, not from a coach's point of view or trust point of view. I think I'm a hands-on person. I want to be there. I want to engage with the boys and ask them, how are you feeling? Look at this. I'm on the field, and we're talking about we're basically engaging, and that's the tough part. That's you can't be there and talk about it on the field as well. Maybe game day, someone might look tired, but you could just speak to him on the mic. It's like, I'm all good, coach. Don't take me off, you know. So that's the type of feeling that I won't have. But other than that, it's actually not hard, because the bigger part of our prep was done, and I've got full trust on Philip's name, because we're on the same page, exactly the same page. We everything that flows out of his mouth or my mouth is exactly what flows out of his mouth. So yeah, I'm pretty confident. Mario Schumann is there as well. So yeah,
you guys are pretty tight in the group to begin with, but you came in last season, obviously with some high hopes. The team was already a bit of a downward, I wouldn't say spiral's not the right word, but the trend was going a bit downward, and you had a lot of injuries, a lot of players leaving at the same time, almost like a perfect storm of what you didn't want to have coming into your first year. You've had to have a lot of, I'm sure you're bald, so I can't say you've got a lot of gray hairs, but I'm sure you've been tested, and the anxiety levels have been a bit up over the last season, your first season in charge.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think my character has been tested, and my spiritual relationship has been tested in the past couple of months, last season. Luckily, I'm still married, so I guess my marriage is still strong, you know. But it was pretty tough. It was pretty tough. There was a lot of work that we needed to do, and the big chunk of the revamping or renewing the team was off the field stuff. So guys not getting along, off the field issues that we needed to deal with, and whether it came from the past or was recent, we just needed to deal with that stuff. And you can just see it literally, that stuff has just filtered away, and we're on the same page. And again, I don't know, ego's the enemy.
Well, the longest time, the Blitzbox, it was said that there's a strong culture and an ethos in that side, and that was one of the things that made the team tick. Has some of those things been compromised in this process, or is it just you feel that this is an evolution that really needed to take place now?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, and it happens with everyone. I think Rossi has probably mentioned this too. He mentions this in the change room all the time, and the boardroom to the boys. Everyone goes through it. You know, at some point you accomplish a couple of accolades, and you get sponsors, and then your uncle and your family are really blowing smoke, and they're really pumping you up, you know, and eventually you start becoming a little bit arrogant and a bit bigger than the game. You think, I don't have to do this, no, but it's about me. So that, all of that stuff, no, I want to live in a single room and not in a double room. So all of that stuff, it has to do with ego, and it builds up, it frustrates people, and that stuff gets carried over to the field. But I guess each and every rugby player goes through that. I think I went through that, and someone needed to humble me. So yeah, that's the stuff that we needed to get through. And just to realize that actually it's not about us. This culture is actually about South Africa. This culture is actually about the Springbok Sevens badge. Like, do we really care about it? So it's got nothing to do with you. So that's been our whole talk. It's not about anyone else. It's literally about this badge and what the badge means to the country. So, it was great. It was a great experience to be where we are right now from a culture point of view, to see how the guys cry and are vulnerable to each other and open up to each other, and they're fighting and they play with this attitude that they they're really hungry, and it's really good to see.
Obviously, a lot of the stuff we don't see away. It's away from the field. It's in your private sort of spaces and such, and it's very easy for the public outside there just to look at the results and the disappointment of some of the tournaments last season, and the World Cup in particular, and the fact that you guys haven't qualified for the Olympics as well at this moment. That's just from a personal level, that must have been extremely frustrating to have all that and that expectation on your back the whole time, because everybody expects you to be there in the top 3-4 sides in the world all the time.
Yeah, I know. And again, I think that expectation was created by our reputation and our hard work in the previous years. So, and we're not shying away from it. Again, like, we want that type of pressure. Otherwise, don't wear the Springbok jersey, you know. But it was just difficult not getting the results, coming short. And we looked at most of our big games against the top 4 teams, against Argentina, New Zealand, Australia. Halftime, we were 2 points up, it was 7-all or 5-all, and we ended up losing the game pretty close. I believe that, and this is what we always preach to the boys, that when two teams are equally good and equally conditioned or talented, it's the team with the best culture that is going to come out on top, because you're just willing to fight for each other a little bit more extra. Oh, he made an error, I'll cover for him. I make an error, then you cover for me. And that's why it looks like it's a smooth working machine where, yes, there were a lot of mistakes, but because we care about each other so much, we cover each other's mistakes, and it looks like solid defense system. And that's what we missed, because you guys don't get along on the field, or you bring your issues off the field and they're coming to the field. I'm like, no, I'm not chasing after the guy. I'm with my fool. You know, little things like that. And I'm not just saying that's the only thing, but we needed to solve a lot of laundry outside off the field and come back to our roots and our culture for us to actually get results or play to our level and standards.
Over the last year, how happy are you that over the last year, the things that you've tried to bed down in this squad, how confident are you that it will take root properly in this campaign?
I'm pretty confident, just purely based on our prep. And I know we came short in the Olympic qualifiers, but the results are not a true reflection of that game and how we prepped. And we had Australia come through, you know, a couple of months ago in South Africa and Stellenbosch, and they were here for 2 weeks, and we gave them 5-6. We won 6 out of the five out of the 6 games, and they put their full squad, you know. So we're definitely on the right path. And just the things that we spoke about, they're such a mature group now. I mentioned one or two things, and they just listening to them and how they talk to each other, that tells you a lot. That tells you that we're on the right path, and that means that we've inflicted our discipline process, myself and Philly, and they know where's the line right now and what it takes to be in this team and play for the Springbok Sevens.
I was going to ask, is there clarification yet about your Olympic qualification? I mean, there is one more tournament, the Repecharge tournament. Are you guys allowed to go? Are you waiting to hear? What's the latest in that?
As far as I'm concerned, I believe there's one more, and I didn't hear anything about us not being able to go and qualify. So, yeah, that's something that Marius Schumann will clarify with us. But we literally changed our focus. We need to win the circuit. End of story. We focus on Dubai. We're going to come Cape Town, come blazing there, and we take it from then on. We believe that if we have a good season and we put the right things in place for each and every tournament, come qualifiers, we are about to qualify. And it'll take care of itself, just purely because of the process of each and every tournament that we went through and we try to perfect. If we look too far, we're going to trip over Dubai. If we're looking at Olympics, we're going to trip over Cape Town. We're looking at Perth or Hong Kong, we're going to trip over Perth or Cape Town. You know? So we have to focus on what's in front of us right now. But just from a clarity point of view, I do believe that we can go to another tournament. Whether we can't or any objections, I've never heard of any objections. So, yeah.
You obviously have a more than a half decent record in Dubai. You met success there last year. How difficult is it after a tournament to sort of shut it all off and move on to the next, as the circus moves on to the next town?
I think for the new boys, it's pretty much difficult there. But I think being a player, I've played there, and being coached by someone that played there, and I'm coaching these boys, and these boys that I played, some of them played in my era as well. So we've got a back to zero process that we implement. It's literally, we say after you win, you're on the rock, you enjoy it as much as you can. The next day, back to zero. And our next session that we do is harder than the game, just because you need to come back and do the things that made you successful in preparation for what you're going to do on the field. Then you're in big trouble. So you need to come back to zero and start all over again. And that is a skill of sevens. You need to come back and do it again. Beat this team, refocus again, enjoy it, high fives. When you get off that field, we don't talk about it again. It's recovery, and we look at the next footage of the next team. We win day one, we don't look at day one again. It's recovery and focus on the next team. So we have a back to zero process that we implement. And it's, again, it's a little bit tough for when you're new. It was tough for guys like Ricky. It will be tough for probably Q and Katlego. But we make sure that they understand what this means and try as hard as possible to psychologically turn the page around and focus on the next thing, next toss at hand.
My last question to you is, streamlined circuit now. You've lost a couple of tournaments. The travel's probably a little bit better. There's now a season finale now, big showpiece season finale. Two-day tournaments instead of three in a lot of the cases, especially Cape Town. Better, worse, obviously less room for error in that situation as well. But how does it change your thinking as well in your preparation?
Yeah, look, I think from a player welfare point of view and longevity and strategy point of view, it's definitely appealing and I think quite accommodating, because your older players will last a little bit longer, you know, because they've got more rest. It's not a back to back. Where if you play a back to back and you've got a guy that's got a niggle, you're losing that guy. So you need to, you're kind of forced or strong armed to go with another strategy or another player, which changes things a little bit. But now it's one tournament at a time, and you've got kind of three weeks at home and traveling once a month. That should give the boys and change your intentions in terms of let's give it our all. We've got three more weeks to rest at home. We've got nothing to lose. You don't have to hold back for another tournament, you know. So yeah, it definitely changes things for us and how we approach it. And I guess your next question would be, how would you approach it? Is we'd like to approach each and every tournament like it's a one-day a once-off tournament. So don't look at Cape Town, Dubai. Just look at Dubai and execute Dubai. Execute day one, game one. Yeah.
Sanila, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Denzel. I really appreciate it. Hopefully see you guys soon.
We wish you well for the rest of the campaign.
And especially the recovery. I think that's we wish you more for those physio sessions that are going to be rather tough. So good luck for that. It's not an easy injury to overcome. So good luck, man.
Yeah, nah, for sure. For sure. Thanks a lot, Brendan. I'll see you in Cape Town.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.